Nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
November 9th, 1989. History is made. The Berlin Wall falls. Years pass. Decades end. A new century is born. In 2021, one wall remains at Revolution Radio. The wall between Studio A, the Wisdom Circle, and Studio B, the Raw Deal. The wall falls. History is made. Wisdom Circle plus Raw Deal equals the event. James Fetzer, David Scorpio, Giuseppe Vaffanculo, Brutal Honesty, Chris Winer. History is made. And now, the event.
Mitchell, I can't hear the station at all. None of us can. Okay, welcome everyone to share your screen. This is weird. Okay.
We hear you, you guys. I hear you, Giuseppe. I don't know why you didn't hear the break. Are y'all there now? Hello?
I'm here, but I couldn't hear anything opening up the show, except for that music in the beginning. But
yeah, that's kind of the intro. I don't know if Michael can hear us.
I think I heard everything.
Yeah, there's Paul's on there too. There's Giuseppe.
Yep, I heard it. I heard it as well. I heard the intro music anyway.
We got you here, Giuseppe? I guess not. Okay, hey, I don't know which one of you guys were going to kick off the show, but where's Giuseppe and Jim? Dave? You there?
I'm here.
Well, Jim, I believe we have our guests, Dave Gehary, Paul English, and Tom Goodrich. Gentlemen, can you hear Jim, and can you say something so we can hear you?
I couldn't hear Jim at all.
I heard everything.
That's weird here.
I heard everything.
Station intro. Now I'm not hearing any of the guests. This is not...
I don't know. Pretty sure it's Tom's fault, but I don't know how exactly, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it probably is.
Because he's we call him Techno Tom, so yeah. He's doing something. He's in like the back door of the system and screwing it up. And he's, of course, playing dumb, like he doesn't know anything about technology, and so that's the perfect cover.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Paul, but am I right?
I think I'm one of the few that heard everything so far.
I heard everything as well, Tommy. It's not just you.
You heard Jim Fetzer?
Yes, I believe so.
Or no, you heard some other guy talking, but I don't think you heard Jim Fetzer.
I think it was
I hope this is going out live because it's so interesting and riveting. And
yes.
That's what we really hope.
Yeah.
Bear with us, folks. We've got to make up.
Anybody like to sing a song?
I could do one of my Elvis songs.
No, stop it, Dave. No, okay. No, too early.
Cease and desist.
Oh, dear.
Sure.
No, I'm keen, but just now's not the right time, I don't think.
Okay. I see Jim Fetzer now, but I don't hear him.
I haven't heard Jim once.
Oh, no, I haven't heard Jim either.
We're isolating the situation, the problem.
Now, Jim is not in this call. You've got Giuseppe, Tom, Mitchell, Paul, me, and the Delta server. I'm looking at it. 6 of 7 in call. Dolphin Dave is hooked up here, but he's not in the call. So I see Jim on video. Hey, Jim. Jim, can you hear me? No. I see Giuseppe. I see Brutal Honesty. And
yeah, I don't know what it is with, I guess it's a connection on StreamYard. I don't know if they can hear, or I don't hear Jim talking at all. It's something wrong with their routing. Yeah, I don't know what it is with, I guess, a connection on StreamYard. I don't know if they can hear. Maybe is Giuseppe sharing sound or not? Are you sharing your sound, Giuseppe? Can you unmute? There you are. You're unmuted.
You know, we're having a major problem here. B is the guests are on B with Mitchell. I can't hear Mitchell. I can't hear the guests. And you they're not hearing you guys. So I'm thinking,
should we all go to StreamYard?
Try and reboot my system. And which means you guys are all going to drop out temporarily. And then when I come back, you'll be able to come on. And I don't know what else to do. I mean, this is crazy. I've never had this.
We all go to the same venue. Would be better.
I just put on the Studio B Vocast feed, and they're talking. Mitchell and the guests are talking.
Yeah.
So,
we hear you talking, Giuseppe, right now. But
of course he is. Right. It'd be good if we could be part of it too. Right. Okay. So
that'd be helpful.
Okay, so let me, I'm going to drop out and reboot and then see if it'll work when I come back. So just stand by.
I'm just going to do an Elvis song while you guys are doing that.
All right, yeah, the Elvis song. Where are we lost? Right. All right. Well, this happens sometimes doing live productions. Let's see. Since I'm holding the server, it won't drop out. Who will drop out when Giuseppe restarts is the question. I feel like maybe.
All right, Dave, it's time for a song.
There you go.
All right, pick the song.
I removed Giuseppe from the call. That way he can restart. We're all still on here, most of us. God, I wonder if I should just pull Jim in. What was your topic today?
How to go live on a radio show?
we didn't have one. We just met you guys.
Well, we're live, but you know, they're not. I guess that's how Marconi felt the first time, huh?
Is Marconi on the call?
No, but he should be.
He ought to be.
I ought to call Jim. Say, hey, I'm going to call him on his cell phone. That way his Skype will be free for Giuseppe. I wonder if I should. I'd probably screw them all up. Better not. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I would love to just pull Jim in. And pull everybody in here, and then they can just go out through StreamYard. Would be nice, but I don't have StreamYard. My connection here at the house is very slow too. I have like caveman internet down here in Southern Virginia.
Wow. Well.
So
Virginia is an interesting state.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm laughing because, you know, the other day we were sitting on E on the gas, and I was worried, and everybody's talking about the pipeline hack and everything, and I'm like, I don't have to go out. I still haven't gone out for gas. I'm not worried about it. Oh my God.
It's pretty cool here, but you know, I saw some lines, but nothing really big.
No, they're trying to pump them dry everywhere, you know, up through the state here. But I'm pretty far out in the country, and I'm well stocked, you know, so I don't have to go anywhere. So I don't, you know, I'm not forced into having to travel. Only by choice. And you know, it's really nice because down here we don't use masks. I don't wear a mask anywhere. Nobody hassles you about having to wear a mask.
And, right. That's horseshit. You know,
yeah,
I only wear them for radio shows.
There you go. I can see it now. Yeah. I know. I mean, it must be like Zoom calls. Hey, there's Giuseppe's joined us again.
All right.
Wow.
Jeez, this is so weird.
Oh my God, there he is. He's back. All right. Do you want me to pull Jim in here? Giuseppe? Silence. That's a radio, right? Oh, my. Let's see.
So we'll get there. I'm here. Right?
What's that?
What studio are we in?
We're in Studio B, but we're simulcasting to Studio A. So we're in both studios right now, but we're streaming out of Studio B, if that makes any sense.
So we're making two audiences really happy, are we?
Oh, yes.
Hey.
Can we ask them to call in with their questions now?
I don't know. I guess you should.
This way, I mean,
I've got a question.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. Well, where's Jim? I'm sure Jim.
Well, that wasn't the question I had. Right, it's quite a good question.
No, but we don't hear anybody. Let me send a note to Giuseppe.
It's Tom. Dave was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. See, that's the thing, man. It's always who you don't think it is. It's them. It's always Tom. Always that damn guy.
It's the quiet one.
Damn it, Jim, my doctor.
All right, here we go. Let's get these guys in here. Let's see.
Do we really need them, or can we just do the show on our own?
Well, hey, you go ahead and start. I mean,
no, I mean, because, you know, they've screwed the whole thing up, right? I mean, we've been doing this for like almost 15 minutes. So just leave them out. We'll just do the show on our own.
Well, let me add.
Welcome to the Dave Gahary Show, everyone.
Yes, all right. The Dave Gahary Show.
It's a takeover. It's a coup. This is what a coup looks like. It's a radio coup.
Hey, Dave.
Jim.
Everyone. Delighted to catch up with you. Jim. Sorry we had this complication.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Wait a second. We just got a message from Giuseppe. I have never run into this before. I don't have a quick answer. I will join later if I can fix Skype. See?
Yes.
Jeez.
Well, give me the state of the conversation here and a brief recap, and we'll just carry forward from here.
We haven't said anything the whole time. We were just silent. We didn't want to do anything, so we did not say a word.
We were kind of trying to wait to find out what y'all were going to do, what you were talking about. I wasn't even sure, Jim.
No one knows. It's not. The idea was to turn up and have a spontaneous conversation, wasn't it? And it really is quite spontaneous. It's just that there's no point to it just yet.
Dave, why don't you take the lead here and introduce the group and the subject, and we'll move from there. Dave.
Jim, do you know Tom Goodrich and Paul English?
I do not, but Giuseppe mentioned they would be joining us today.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let me fill you in. I mean, you should know. First, let me tell you, Jim, she called me back from the post office, and for some reason they were having trouble scanning it. So let's see what happens. That's all. We don't have any control over it, but that's the way it is, right, with our USPS. But so Tom Goodrich wrote the book Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, which is one of those books that you're familiar with that get banned. And so...
We're talking about Russian atrocities upon the German people when they took occupied Germany. I mean, it was vicious, sadistic, unbelievably awful, truly grotesque. Yes.
Yes. Not just Russian, but Allied and also Mongol. So Tom wrote the book Hellstorm, and it was suggested to me to reach out to Tom, although we had communicated before, like 10 years earlier. And I, of course, had read the book. And then we decided to move forward to do a second edition. And then Paul English, who's on the line here, he did the audio book of Hellstorm, which is 14 hours long. And then Kyle Hunt, who you know, I think, he did the movie, the documentary on Hellstorm based on Tom's book. So we have all of those items available for people in one spot, and you probably want to start with Tom.
Just terrific. Let's begin with Tom. Tom, give us a broad brush treatment of your book, parts of which I have read, and I found it devastating and horrifying at the same time.
Well, Jim, as Dave interjected and pointed out, this isn't just about Russian atrocities. Hellstorm, the death of Nazi Germany, 1944-1947, is about Allied atrocities, including the Americans, as much as we might not want to admit that. I found out that in a later version of Hellstorm, which is called Summer 1945, it's a spinoff of Hellstorm, that the Americans probably committed as many or more atrocities than the Russians, if that was possible. Now, that's a revelation for most people, of course. It's a revelation for me to find out that the Americans were not far, if at all, behind the Russians in destruction, in rape, in murder, in massacre. So it was a joint effort of the Allies to destroy Germany. And that's the essence of Hellstorm. It was part of the plan to destroy utterly, not just in a figure of speech, but destroy Germany utterly. Now, that, of course, probably began somewhere in 1933 when Adolf Hitler became the Chancellor of Germany. Probably somewhere that's where this boat was floated, basically the massacre, the destruction of Germany. But it didn't, the Allies didn't take their gloves off until toward the end of World War II. Then they knew that they were going to win. Germany was going to lose, and they knew that they could do anything they wanted, anything in the world, and nobody was going to call them to account for it. Hence, we're talking about the firebombing, the massive slaughter, massacre of German civilians, mostly women and children. The men are off fighting or dead. And so every German city and many German towns were simply burned to the ground by firestorms, phosphorus bombs. But the rape in the East by the Russians, and that is, Dave pointed out, the Mongolians, the rear echelon, the Asiatic troops that followed the Red Army, the white Russians, who did by far the most damage in Germany. And as far as the raping, more of that than anything else. But again, I found out that the Americans in my next book, Summer 1945, were not far behind, if at all, doing these atrocities. But by then, of course, 1944, 1945, the Allies knew they were going to win and knew they could do virtually anything they wanted. They had all the media on their side. They had the Jews basically following both armies into Germany when they invaded on the East and West fronts. And so with the publicity and the propaganda apparatus in place, they could do anything they wanted, and everything would be projected upon the Germans after the war, of course, to the Nuremberg trials, things like that. And so that's what we still have today. We still have a war against Germany. It's going on right now. Witness the inundation of the country by coloreds from everywhere, Africa, Middle East. This is a war that's continuing to this very day.
Yeah, but Tom, that's a war against all of white civilization in Europe, even reaching into Scandinavia. I take it part of your discovery was that Eisenhower allowed what, hundreds of thousands, as many as a million German POWs to starve to death in prison camps? Could you elaborate on that?
Well, that was just Eisenhower's way of continuing the war. Of course, they tried to kill as many Germans as possible during the war, before the German forces had surrendered. But Eisenhower had a plan to destroy Germans after the war, during so-called peace. And yes, this deliberate starvation, massacre of Germans in prison camps after the war, that was his way of continuing to kill. As if the war wasn't bad enough, as if there wasn't an already enough bloodshed, Eisenhower... had never got enough. He wanted to add even more, and he did. Anywhere from 800,000 to 1.5 million helpless, disarmed German POWs were allowed to die from starvation, dehydration, lack of medicine, lack of shelter, absolute and actually murder. So this war continued, and while the massacre in the prison camps were going on, of course, the German women were still being raped. Anytime you wanted a woman, you had her. There was no argument. And so the war continued even in months of peace.
Let me ask Paul about this. When he created the audio version, it must have been horrific to read about how the Russians would take the young women in Germany and try to make them sexually unattractive, lop off their breasts, insert bayonets into their vaginas, trying to destroy their capacity to reproduce. I found this hair-raising and profoundly disturbing, even nauseating. What was your take, Paul?
Yes. Hi, Jim. Well, I've had several readings of it, obviously, because I've recorded it as an audio book. But prior to that, as a reader, I went through exactly the same, a very similar to experience to the one you've just detailed, which is that, and I've said this before, Tom's aware of it, and Dave is too. When I read it in the summer of 2014, it was a case of having to put the book down every 45 minutes or whatever and go for a walk in the garden to sort of catch my breath about, because it was the, you know, unfortunately, as you get older, you realize that terrible and horrific things have taken place. And it's not quite like it was in the movies. In fact, it's nothing like it was really in the movies. It's just a sort of total horrific mess. And so when Tom had gathered in the material and delineated it so well and put you, regrettably, I might say, I suppose, right there in with them, because it's written in that way, it's like an account, the impact was considerable. And it was for that reason, I suppose, that later on, about 4 or 5 years later, I spoke to Tom with the idea of doing the audiobook, not something that I'd done before, but the book had made a huge impact on me. I'm not alone in that. And it was just something that came together in that way. So when I read it to record it, I didn't have the emotional adventure because I chose not to have it whilst I read it. It was not, I thought, if I get emotive with this, that's not what we want. We don't want that. The listener's emotions, if they come through, will come through of their own accord. It's got nothing to do with me. It's not a theatrical production as such. The idea was to provide it in a really clean way and a level way. Because you don't need to do anything else with it. The material actually, obviously, I know it's a cliche, but it does speak for itself. And in this case, of course, it speaks very loudly, very clearly, and very destructively. And so it's a sobering book on every single level and a very useful one for people to really understand just what it is that's arranged against us, because it's considerable and it hasn't gone away.
Very, very good, Paul. Dave, were you drawn into this in the publishing process or in other ways?
Yeah, it was in the publishing process because Tom didn't feel that he was getting the book out there enough. And so a colleague of both of ours suggested we speak, and we did, and we liked each other, and we started to work on the second edition, which is pretty much almost exactly like Hellstorm. It's just that some things were changed, some minor things. But yeah, that's, I mean, I had read it 10 years earlier, and I had read it as you know, I read books to my son at night. And he was young when I read this one, but so he didn't really grasp it, fortunately. but I did read it. Simona heard it, and she was very affected by it, as I was. You know, it made her cry certain times. And so, you know me, Jim, and, you know, when somebody tries to tell me what I can read or what I can do, and I just go into battle mode. So I was already there, ready to do battle against the enemy and get the book out and the audiobook and the movie, which we all decided on.
Excellent. That's absolutely wonderful. We're gonna finesse the break here at the bottom of the hour because of our late start. Meanwhile, Chris, let me have some of your preliminary thoughts about what we're hearing from Tom, Ball, and Dave.
Yeah, I've been looking at history in a similar approach and trying to see it through the alternative narrative that's been provided by the robber barons that have pretty much been on both sides of this war, I think. And I think there really seems to be a long-term agenda that they've utilized, whether you go back to ancient Rome or whether you're talking medieval Europe. They run two Masonic houses theoretically against each other, two banking houses, two prominent empires. In many cases, sometimes it's even three. And I think that that's a perfect trinity of obfuscation, of accountability and blame. And it really it takes the global population into this chaos or frenzy where they pretty much have to or they can push the status quo or the standards of life or lack thereof in these areas under these pretenses and control trade and eventually currency and through that, you know, pretty much everything in terms of humanity. So I'm looking at World War II as kind of being more of a Masonic theater than much of anything in terms of like what they're saying happened and what actually happened. And I think, you know, seeing what we're seeing now with this depopulation agenda going on right now, it wouldn't surprise me at all if this theater was just more to serve a cover fire for a longer, bigger agenda that maybe they're trying to deliver to Europe, whether it's to dissociate them from the exchange of gold and silver in their currencies or to put them onto the Bank of International Settlements / IMF World Bank central banking systems or put them under UN law, which we're seeing now. So I look at this kind of like how Rothschild went after the Soviet Empire in 1917, you know, where they run in operatives out of, you know, London and Geneva, like Kerensky and Lenin. Kerensky represented a lot of the mining interest out of London in Russia, you know, prior to that. And Lenin, obviously, with Geneva and you know, Trotsky, again, would be another one. They ran against Stalin. Stalin represented the Baku oil fields and had a lot of power in that region. Trotsky was like financed by London and New York as well. And you know, so I think that really they run these type of operations like that, where they control both offerings. And you know, it reminds me a lot of even in South Africa with like Rhodes and Barney Bernabo going after the gold and diamond industries. One's using a Rothschild bank out of England, one's using a Rothschild bank out of France, but they're both pretty much cornering the market and taking the stuff over. And then I start looking at the U.S. Revolution in the same way. So I'm looking at history in a whole new scope. And I just wanted to run some of these ideas past you guys and see what your research has concluded. If you've encountered similar type of situations or made similar connections, or if, you know, maybe because it seems like this is all like a banker's theater that these wars are, and they just like call the herd. They call the fighting age male populations and build their empires on the backs of widows and orphans.
Well, let me bring in Scorpio, first of all, to respond to what Tom and Paul and Dave have been observing about this book, which is quite a brilliant expose, but horrific in so many different ways. Scorpio, your thoughts.
Well, thank you, Jim. And it's a great honor to talk to everyone on the panel here. And Hellstorm is a great book, really powerful. But, you know, I don't think that this is a Masonic theater, really, simply because Hitler and Mussolini both outlawed Freemasonry during their times in power. So I'm not sure how that correlates. But, you know, one thing that's fascinating to me is that is if you look at the, you know, meteoric rise of Eisenhower within the U.S. military, nobody has risen quite as fast as Eisenhower did. It's very odd. And if you look, you know, at his yearbook from West Point, they called him the Swedish Jew, which is strange. So, you know, there seems to be such a vindictive hatred towards the German people, literally trying to kill as many as possible. And I think that that motivation has to go beyond mere military, you know, motivation. This had something to do with genetics and actually destroying the German people. Maybe I could get, you know, some of your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, remember, Judea declared war on Germany in 1933. Most of the world doesn't know that, but it's a fact of the matter that the Jews were very aggressive in attacking Germany. And I think it's because Hitler was taking measures to curtail their control of the German economic system and finances, which they were using to benefit themselves, to the detriment of Germany. Tom, your thoughts?
I agree with that. I try to keep things simple. And it was a war against Germany. Totally was. And it was basically a Jewish war. A Jewish power grid declared war upon Germany in 1933, in essence. Let me say this also about the book itself. The reason it is so powerful and emotional, as many people have said, is because it's in the words of the people themselves. I really didn't have to go too far. I didn't have to do any research in certain areas, because this was to be a you are there type of approach. First person, let the people tell the story themselves. The victims, the victimizers, the people in charge, the allies, the victims, the Germans themselves. And I can't really speak to too much of the conspiracy theory type stuff. I know what the conspiracy was, in fact, which is an easy one. But ultimately, it was, whether anyone likes it or not, it was a Jewish war against Germany. Ultimately, white people in general, but Germany first and foremost, because they were the leaders of Europe. They were the leaders in the world at the time. They were the ones that we all looked to, the greatest creators, the greatest inventors. Let's face it, actually, when they got out of that hole they were in from the Versailles Treaty, after World War I, when they finally got out of that funk, a deliberately contrived funk, within a few weeks, or excuse me, a few years, they came back to leadership. And the Jewish power grid in the world could see this. And that's the last thing on earth they wanted, was a Germany that was free and independent of their control. And so that's why the defeat, the war itself, and ultimately the defeat was so egregious, so terrible, so evil, so vile, so vicious, and so utter. It was an attempt to destroy that for all times and all. In fact, actually, it has happened that way. The Germans now are a far, far cry from what they were in the 1930s and even the 1940s. The war continues against Germany. And the war, of course, is to keep them from breeding, quite simply. No more Germans, to lead the rest of the white world. And you can see what happened to the rest of the white world when Germany did fall. Look at us now. Yeah, we're hardly better than Germany after World War II right now.
I think those are wonderful observations, Tom. Paul, would you confirm them and add your own thoughts?
Yes, well, I never disagree with anything that Tom says, really. But that's because there's so much shared material, I guess, floating around. Everything he said is absolutely spot on. I think, I mean, the word conspiracy, of course, is thrown around all over the place, but they're not really theories. I mean, it's a bit like a light switch. A conspiracy either, after further research, is proved to be true or not. And when it comes to this arena, most of them are true in the sense of men gathering together, making plans, and the vast majority of people being unaware of those plans intentionally, because they're the ones that are going to suffer because of those plans. I think there's so many elements come to bear in it, and they're very important, because today on radio stations, you know, normal ones, as it were, and on TV, somebody will be saying, we'll be using the epithet of Nazi to describe something terrible and awful and evil, and it must be avoided at all costs. And the tragic irony is that National Socialism, of course, is the expression of the German people at that time. It's not going to come back. You know, you can't be one. It ended in 1945, you know, no matter how much you want to dress up and do it. And I know some people do. But in terms of what they were opposing globalism, to use modern terminology. They were against it. And they were for the extension of the revitalization of Western Christian civilization. People don't think that, of course, because they've been taught other things counter to that, which is part of the ongoing communications conspiracy, as it were, against, you know, them and their true history. But there are many, many plans and influences. There's the whole of the Russian thing, I think, is key, because the conflict with Russia, in one way, did not need to start at all. If we want to sort of take a benign view, why bother? You know, it'd all been over and wrapped up. But there was, it turns out that that was the whole epicenter of the war. I mean, there's something like 65, 70% of all the energy of the war was expelled in that confrontation in the East. That's a lot. That's a lot of energy and a lot of death, which Tom has to cover in the book and does, you know, from the people who were experiencing it and in it and seeing it and witnessing it. And why is that? Because the forces of international globalist communism had to be defeated. They weren't, but they were delayed considerably by the attempt by the Germans. That's my take on it. Of course, other people would dispute these things. I understand that. But there are so many other documents coming out, particularly since the fall of the wall in 1990, that begin to provide a very simple and direct view, which to me is profoundly appealing because it makes sense. By their fruits shall ye know them. And it becomes clear what's taking place. It does to me anyway. So, you know, if Russia are amassing an army of 6.5 million, it's always 6 million, isn't it? Anyway, six and a half million people on the Polish border, what are you supposed to think that's all about? I mean, you know, people dismiss it and go, oh, well, they were just amassing a big army there. I mean, it's colossal. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's probably the largest army ever amassed in the whole of human history in terms of the number of men. Maybe the Chinese are going to outdo it, you know, with what's coming up. But that's an awful lot of men, and it costs an awful lot of money to keep an army sat still in one place, eating and doing whatever they got to do, maintaining all their equipment. It was there for a purpose. So that the attack by Germany upon Russia, which of course is always painted as a suicide mission, and I guess to some degree it was, because it was delayed. You know, they should have gone a lot earlier, and we can go into all those minutiae, but that's really secondary, I think. They just really didn't have any choice. And it's Stalin that is a key figure in this for all sorts of reasons, not just because of his intent, I think, to come right through Western Europe and take over the whole lot with armed force, but because he was also viewed with suspicion by other international communists. They didn't want to take this approach. I mean, as far as I'm aware, Stalin was not supposed to be the guy that fell into power there. That position had been reserved for Trotsky. But when he did for them all, when he turned up and did them all in, the bankers in London lost control of their pet project for a while. They really did. And so this conflict suited them ably. And of course, you have to look at the funding of Germany, where it came from. And everybody says, see, it's this and see, it's that. But I mean, I have to tell you that if I was Mr. Hitler and people wanted to pour money into me after I'd been, you know, ruined in the 1920s, I'd take it from anywhere I could get it, you know? Yes. So, and there are all sorts of, you know, Samuel Untermeyer flipped his lid in the early 30s because he found out that many Jewish banking firms on Wall Street were making a fortune extending loans to Germany. They just couldn't resist because, of course, the Germans, being an able, very capable people, were able to actually deliver on the investment that they received. So he stopped that as well. You know, Untermeyer is the guy that basically kicked off and declared war on them, I suppose. He was the mouthpiece for it, wasn't he, in 1933, Jim, as you mentioned a bit earlier.
Paul, that was just sensational stuff. David, has any figure ever been more unjustly demonized in all of history than Adolf Hitler, who have studied the actual survival of Germany post the Treaty of Versailles, which dealt with them so unjustly, rebuilt the nation into an economic and political superpower, and yet he's invariably villainized as one of the greatest monsters of history. Your thoughts, Dave?
Which Dave?
Gaheri.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think so. And I'm, you know, a little late to the table about this fellow, but no, I think that this guy is, as we could tell by what the Jews media puts out constantly, not just in their, you know, their print media and their publishing arms and their television networks, their cable networks, their on-demand networks, Hollywood. It's constant Nazi, constant Hitler to remind the sleeping masses that this is the enemy, this is the bad guy. So I think it's really crystallizes in how the Jews media treats this guy. Even, you know, where are we, you know, 75, 80, 100 years, whatever it is, away from the end of World War II. So that was 45. So, you know, it just, it never ends with these guys. They just have to keep hammering it home, just like they did with, for example, you may have seen it, with that singer-songwriter, Van Morrison, who just came out with a song called They Own the Media. He didn't say who they were, but all of the Jews media now is attacking him for promoting anti-Semitic tropes when he never mentioned the Jews, which just obviously proves the point that they control the media because they don't want anybody knowing it. So I think the amount of attention that the Jews media pays to this fella, Adolf Hitler, is indicative of how they need to continue demonizing him even almost a century after he graced the planet Earth.
Just as they control Hollywood and as they control Congress, I mean, I guess now everyone knows about the pledge, but when Cynthia McKinney first revealed it on Press TV around 2011, she thought everyone knew. When she explained that new members of Congress are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States, and where when issues have been raised about Jewish domination of Hollywood, we had a reporter just chime out, of course Jews control Hollywood, and he went through all of the studios and all of their owners and directors and CEOs, and with a single exception of the actors created studio, every one of them was dominated by the Jews, but he was boasting about it, asserting it was a good thing. Kritz, your thoughts? Kritz, are you with us? Scorpio.
Yeah, I'm with.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Kritz.
This thing, the Skype is jacked. I'm sorry. I was trying to unmute it and it just kept remuting. Yeah, no, I have to say this is what I was talking about, this Judeo-Masonic order that has existed beyond Rome, beyond Greece, beyond Egypt. So, Scorpio, this will maybe help you maybe get a more perspective of what I've been talking about. I've been waiting 30 minutes to say this, but yeah, this is what I think is going on. Look at the end game. Follow the money. Follow the power. Follow the structure. Follow those you can't criticize. If you guys don't see this plain as day, I don't know if you ever will. And if you don't see that there's secret societies running both sides of this shit, I don't think you guys are going to realize these guys don't leave anything to chance. And they probably are never going to do that either. You're going to be serving their dirty work for them, man. You're going to be doing their dirty work for them, man. So study up, guys. That's all I can say.
Well, you have a strong point of view, and we respect it, and you back it up with a lot of arguments. Scorpio, your thoughts?
Well, I just don't think that the Masons were controlling Nazi Germany or Italy under Mussolini. They outlawed all the lodges and clamped down on those two organizations very, very hard. I think they temporarily lost control of both of those nations. That's why they had to be punished so severely. We're seeing that punishment continue today. And, it's interesting, Jim, about the ownership of the media in Hollywood. You're absolutely right about what that journalist said. In fact, he even added, the Jews control Hollywood and the media, so what? Okay, that's what he even went that far. And, it's interesting, too, how now we have this great threat of white supremacists and neo-Nazis in America, where this is just a paper tiger, that there's really no such thing. It's a very small number of people. But that's really, both of those are just sort of code for, the possibility of white people figuring out what's going on and standing up to the agenda. That's why they always want to paint everyone as a white supremacist or a neo-Nazi. It's all kabuki theater and fantasy. And Paul, I was just wondering if you could expound upon, your idea that under Stalin, that they lost control of their pet project temporarily, and that Trotsky was supposed to be the heir to the whole thing. That's fascinating. Maybe you could expound upon that a little bit, if you could.
Yeah, there's a document that was released. You'll be able to find it somewhere. I think it's called, is it the Red Terror or something like that? It starts off with an interview with a guy of a Jewish guy in the Russian Politburo called Rakovsky. He was a finance minister, and he's been interrogated by another Russian in Paris about 1935. who was a very able interrogator from the, what would it have been, the NKVD then, I think, or whatever it was. Anyway, from the alphabet. So, and it's a doctor administers a drug to Rakovsky to get him to really open up. And they record, they do a transcript of the interview, and it begins about midnight and ends about 7 o'clock in the morning. And it's one of those communications that shifted everything for the people that could see it at the time. Bizarrely, the document was found on the body of a dead Spanish soldier on the Eastern Front. Not many people are aware, but many Spaniards felt extremely kindly towards Hitler for what he'd done to save them from the Spanish Civil War. And although Franco forbade them from fighting, the Blue Hats just took off and went across the Alps, joined up, and fought honorably on the Eastern Front. I don't know if honorably is the right word, but you get the idea, with great guts. And it was found on the body of, this document was found on the body of a dead Spanish soldier. But what it basically details is that the whole of the system, of course, emanates from banking, which it does. Everything is banking. And so to say that all wars are bankers' wars is absolutely true, and all civilizational control systems are from banking as well. And the reason, the prime reason I would suggest why we have such a struggle from a purely engineering point of view, forget about emotion and races and anything like that, is that everybody in this phone call and everybody in the nations that we come from, none of us have a stake. We do not own what is supposedly our bank. It's owned by others, and they own it over us and use it as a tool to basically manipulate things as they see fit. So failure to own your own bank ensures failure in all other things, in my view. And we know this really because, you know, the reason why there was such a hammering for Germany is they took themselves outside of that loop. Now, countries that have done it recently, Libya, what happened to Libya? Oh, yeah, they got bombed, right? Anybody that takes themselves out of that system, if they can't negotiate with them or bribe them or bring them back or whatever they can do, literally, the nation will be bombed. That's what happens. They bomb it back into submission. And that's what happened with Germany. I mean, because if you are going to run around, it seems to me, and try and pretend that communism is some sort of great utopian thing, which is the most bizarre, stupid, and recklessly idiotic, childish idea, you can't have a country like Germany demonstrating that your idea for communism is complete crap. And that's exactly what Germany was demonstrating. I mean, what people are not aware of is that by 1936, when they had the Olympics, they got TVs running in cafes in Berlin. But you're not supposed to know that. You're just supposed to bleat about Jesse Owens, which, of course, is another lie, because Adolf Hitler did not snub Jesse Owens. In fact, he treated him better than Roosevelt, according to Owens' own testimony. But the thing about Stalin was that Trotsky was the placeman of the Rothschilds. He was groomed. They thought, Trotsky's going to be, he's our man, he's going to come in. And Stalin turns up and acquires power and understood what was going on. He's an ambivalent figure, is Stalin. I think there probably was part of him that was loyal to Russia. Maybe it's a bit like Putin. Maybe they always have these figures. But there was also the situation that every single one of his...
Did we lose Paul? Tom, are you there, Tom? Can you pick up?
I'm here, but I can't carry on from what Paul has been saying, because he's been saying it as usual so eloquently and so thoroughly.
Let me ask you for a variation. Is what going on in the United States an attempt to turn the country communist? Because it sure looks that way to me and many others.
I'd have to say yes, absolutely. Of course it does. This situation right now, you know, I've been around in this country quite a while now. And to suddenly start seeing Jewish professors talking about our extermination, coming right out and saying it over. I mean, we're talking about people in very important positions, but professors, for God's sakes, or characters from the Hollywood talking about getting rid of white people. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that 20 years ago, even someone saying that and meaning it? And then obviously with their marching in the streets and on the West Coast, Portland, Seattle, LA, places like that, it's right in front of our faces. Yes, that's what this is all about. I have no doubt about it whatsoever. I'm not an expert on politics or banking or anything like that, but I know what I see. And this is very scary stuff. And the fact that we are unorganized right now, we are scattered around this entire nation. We have no leadership. And we're in a very desperate situation right now. We need to come together, coalesce, become one people again, and start thinking like one people again, and start turning our face toward the enemy. The enemy is looking at us.
I think your points are spot on, Tom. I mean, not just 10 years ago, 5 years ago, a year ago, all this kind of anti-white rhetoric would have been regarded as insulting, absurd, outrageous, to be condemned. Paul, you're making so many wonderful points, and then we seem to lose you. Please pick up wherever you like.
Sure. I guess I was kind of answering Dave, you know, with regards to Trotsky and Stalin at the time. But I mean, and what you've just said, Jim, is correct. I mean, the imposition of communism, of course, is the goal. And communism, I would suggest, is the ultimate expression of capitalism. What capitalists want, those guys that own the bank, is they want communist countries, i.e. a completely micromanaged population. And you've lived under communism most of your life. It's just been called capitalism. I mean, what are those planks of it? A progressive income tax? I think you'll find you've got one of those. We've had one over here for an awful long time. Nobody asked us, but we got one anyway, you know, because it's for our own good. And just go through the Communist Manifesto. You'll find that you've been living under it, but they've disguised it in a different way. Basically, so that it's been a slow burn to chew out the substance of Western Christian nations. That's what they've done. And it's morphed, the latest thing, particularly after 45, has been the cultural undermining of our nations. So we now have what passes for cultural expression is just basically sort of pornography, audio pornography, visual pornography. It's just self-indulgent twaddle, most of it, and it's garbage. You know, it doesn't represent us as a people because we're not in charge of those industries. You were mentioning the Jewish journalist. I think it's Joel Stein who was bragging about the fact, yeah, we run Hollywood and I don't care. You know, everybody knows it. All I care is that we carry on running it. Well, he got his wish and they now produce such puke. It's just unbelievable. It's more like a sort of comedy garbage, isn't it, that they've been producing for a long time. But to try and answer that question, because there's so many things we go off. I am going off in many directions here, so my apologies for that. But
not a problem.
When Stalin came in, they lost control of Russia. So one of the threads, I'm not suggesting this is necessarily true, but it seems to have a lot to it, is this, that they allowed Hitler to rearm on purpose to basically constrain Stalin for a while. See, they wanted to take over the world slowly by culturally undermining place. But Stalin's idea was to build a huge army and just roll through. That's what he was doing. So there are all sorts of, I don't think that these guys are necessarily always batting for the same team. There are divisions inside this sack of rats. There absolutely are. They're vying for power and doing things. They always create this impression that they're fully unified. That is not the case. But they're able to manipulate and corrupt our key people in positions of power so that whenever our key people speak, people like you and I are listening to them and going, this is lies. Who are these people? These people are not my leaders. I mean, we're currently inundated with these retards. You know, you've got a man that can't talk who didn't win an election running around pretending he's president, and lots of the media are pretending he's a president as well. He isn't, of course. He's a joke. Poor lad needs to go home, but he won't because he's useful to them. So Stalin's situation is very difficult. I mean, with the Luftwaffe, Stalin trained the Luftwaffe. How about that? It's just unbelievable because they didn't have any pilots. They'd been starved of technical advances in armaments. He fed them. Stalin fed the Germans loads of weaponry and technical diagrams, which he'd stolen from Vickers in England, Thompson in the US. His agents were in there. They got all the latest developments for machinery and sent it to the German design factories in Berlin, and they began to build tanks and everything. They didn't have any pilots, so they used to go on a little jolly into Finland for 2 weeks. I don't know what it was, camping things, and they would train all the pilots because his goal, and this is according to Suvorov, and I go along with this in a book called The Chief Culprit, which I would strongly recommend to anybody who's not read it. His goal, Stalin's goal, was to do a rerun of World War I. The idea was that France and Germany and Britain were to fight to utter exhaustion this time, which wouldn't have been too difficult because they were still reeling from the end of World War I. And then this huge army that he built would literally just mop up. It would just move all the way to Dublin in Ireland and just communize the whole place.
Well, I want to return to your approximation of capitalism as a version of communism, which I think requires some spelling out. But before we get there, we've had several references to this column by Joel Stein that appeared in the Los Angeles Times on the 19th of December, 2008, entitled, Who Runs Hollywood? Come on. I've never been so upset by a poll.
Thank you for calling Wyndham Professionals.
Only 22% of Americans now believe the movie and television industries are pretty much run by Jews, down from nearly 50% in 1964. The Anti-Defamation League, which released the poll results last month, sees in these numbers a victory against stereotyping. Actually, it just shows how dumb America has gotten. Jews totally run Hollywood. How deeply Jewish is Hollywood? When the studio chiefs took out a full-page ad in the Los Angeles Times a few weeks ago to demand that the Screen Actors Guild settle its contract, the open letter was signed by News Corp President Peter Charon, Jewish, Paramount Pictures Chairman Brad Gray, Jewish, Walt Disney Company Chief Executive Robert Iger, Jewish, Sony Pictures Chairman Michael Linton, surprise, Dutch Jew, Warner Brothers Chairman Barry Meyer, Jewish, CBS Corporation Chief Executive Leslie Moonves, so Jewish his great uncle was the first Prime Minister of Israel. That would be David.
God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back! You can torture us and bomb us, fire is catching. And if we burn, You burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. Its staff or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the column by Joel Stein about who runs Hollywood in the Los Angeles Times in 2008 has other interesting parts, but let me just tie off with this last paragraph. The Jews are so dominant, I had to scour the traits to come up with six Gentiles in high positions at entertainment companies. When I called them to talk about their incredible advancement, five of them refused to talk to me, apparently out of fear of insulting Jews. The sixth, AMC president Charlie Collier, turned out to be Jewish. So it looks as though, you know, he's taking great pride in it, boasting about it, declaring himself to be a proud Jew. But he suggests that the diminishing number of those who realize or appreciate the Jews run Hollywood is an indication of stupidity. That it's not beneficial, that it's not working against stereotypes, as the ADL would suggest, but rather an indication that Americans just have no clue as to what's going on. Dave Gaheri, I think you'd probably agree with that. Most Americans have no clue.
Yeah. You know me, Jim. Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is that the Jews media has had free rein to brainwash the sleeping, tattooed, cell phone obsessed masses. And so unless and until we have something as potent as a network on television, because the morons believe that if it's on TV, it has to be true, when obviously the opposite is the case, until we get that, we're always going to be fighting a rear guard action. So I think that is probably our most pressing mission, to get a network on television, to somehow penetrate the Federal Communications Commission and get a pro-American, non-poison, non-communist, non-socialist, non-Jewish network, kind of like the way Disney wanted to set it up, until it was infiltrated and devoured by Eisner and company. And now Iger, as you said, controls it. Unless and until we do that, we're done, unfortunately. By the way, I spoke with Giuseppe a little bit ago, and he's having trouble with his Skype. So he's trying to figure it out. I think he is contacting Skype itself. So unfortunately, he will not be joining us.
Yeah, well, that's too bad, because he was arranging the whole shebang, and somehow it was defeated. Scorpio, would you like to add further thoughts, since you were initiating part of this line of discussion? Where I do want to return to Paul's points about capitalism versus communism. Remember, capitalism promotes the profit motive, private property, individual competition. Communism at least historically and traditionally, quite the opposite. So I think there are going to be issues we want to pursue here about exactly what Paul had in mind, Scorpio.
Well, I'll just briefly comment on that because I want to hear Paul's take on this. You know, essentially, we don't really have any kind of capitalism because as long as you have a phony central bank printing out phony money that's not tied to anything, you don't have a real system of anything. And the other thing is that the stock market is the way they funnel this funny money into the system and manipulate business and the economy. So we have the appearance of capitalism, but we certainly do not have anything close to it. And really, with Operation COVID, they're sort of cleaning up all the loose ends with taking out small business and consolidating everything into a giant, corporation, essentially.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, Chris, would you like to add some further thoughts of your own to any of the above? Chris, let me come back all the way to Tom if Chris is not with us. Tom, go ahead.
I'll be honest. I haven't been following that much because I've got something else going on right now. I want to say this, though. I feel a little bit like a schoolboy coming to a high philosophical confab here, more or less, because I am a historian and I have written so much in my life that I haven't been allowed the time to pay attention to the other stuff, the important stuff. And I know how important it is because I talked to Paul quite a bit, the banking system, things like that, capitalism versus communism, if they are versus at all. In fact, I have to agree that they're more alike than dislike, it seems. We got into this situation somehow, folks, by the what we're following, and capitalism has always been that. In fact, I actually was a proponent of capitalism for quite a while until I figured out what was really going on. Paul, you're going to have to help me out of this because, again, I'm not, I can't claim to talk about things I know nothing about or very little about.
Paul, no. Go right ahead. Pick it up.
Well, I think, Dave, Scorpio, you were just touching on a really important point, I think, that none of us are capitalists. And I think, maybe someone here is, but I'll tell you what my definition of a capitalist is. A capitalist is someone who has enough stuff, could be anything, land, sheep, gold, extra pairs of socks, whatever, assets, which yield up sufficient income that he doesn't have to lift a finger to work. He lives off the capital. And that's what a capitalist actually is, in my view. And therefore, the vast majority of people that live in the capitalist West continue to find themselves just like their forefathers, not being a capitalist, but working for a bigger capitalist for a wage. That's been the tradition. And there's good and bad things about that. And you can't sort of pick and choose because you get born whenever you're born and you get the cards you're dealt with and you have to deal with them. And it'll always be that way to some degree. But the situation with capitalism is that obviously the banking system itself is a rotten trick. That's never taught at school. It's not being taught today. There'll be people even going to school, these small little things will be going to school and wearing their masks or whatever other dreadful, stupid thing they've got to do and, absorbing all the bilge that's coming out of the mouths of the teachers who are all out of Marxist university and don't know anything at all. And of course, it's now replicating. Idiocy is being amplified and repeated down through the generations, which is really, really scary. I mean, this is part of the key problem. But they won't be taught about banking. All of us, I suspect, went to school or university or whatever, and there'll be two things. There are many things that you're not taught about. There's two that are without a doubt the most powerful pragmatic forces that bear down upon you your entire life. One's money, and the other one is the law. And they didn't teach me anything about that at school. I took economics for 2 years. They never touched the bank. And even in advanced degree courses on banking, on economics, they only spend a couple of days on banking. It's just nothing to really worry about. The fact is that if you don't understand banking, there's no point being an economist. I mean, economists are really like cooks. They just make stuff up. They just make a cake, and then they tell you why it didn't rise or whatever. And it's completely tedious and totally irrelevant to what's actually important. If you are trying to run an economy with a currency unit that changes in value all the time, it's a bit like trying to make a building over several months where the tape measures vary in length every day. Now, if you did that, if the inch was a different actual length every day, none of your buildings are going to stand up. They just won't. They're not going to do it. Well, that's what the economy's like. It doesn't join up. But of course, it's designed to be that way so that they can actually run this control system and say, don't worry, everybody, we'll sort all your problems out. We're bankers. We know what's going on, you know, and all this, that, and the other. So, I mean, and if you look at the ultimate expression of where capitalism goes, what has happened? In the West, particularly in America, where you had an amplified version of it, what has occurred is that a cartel of people, not all Jewish, of course, but primarily in terms of these high power centers, have acquired reins of control over all the major industries because the system itself produces that. It's designed to do it. Capitalism effectively drives more and more purchasing power into an ever smaller group of hands. And that ever small group of hands all talk to one another to make sure that they can retain their paws on the money. And it's not about just having billions or trillions in many cases. It's so that nobody else can have it. That's the reason why they want it. They don't want anybody else to have influence over the things. They want it all, you see. And capitalism enables them to do it. So when they, you know, my assertion that communism is the ultimate expression of capitalism is that it puts a nation in exactly the ideal prone condition that capitalists want. So, you know, that's why they like to lend to nations. And if you've got them under a progressive income tax and these other things, then away you go. Now, all the ideology that's wrapped up with it is just another bit of window dressing. It doesn't really matter. They don't care what it's called. They have to have good cop, bad cop. You have to have communism, capitalism. We have to be cross with one another. But the fact is, both of the economies are run like dog shit. And the little guy pays for it all the time. And they make us pay for their mistakes. And this is just simply to do with the fact that we don't, you know, on one level, it is complex, but on one level, because none of us here own our own bank, right, we can't succeed. Now, Germany, coming back to where we started off, Germany owned their own bank. And what was demonstrated, we have to bear in mind that when Hitler came to power in 33 or whenever it was, the early 30s, it was a basket case, was Germany. I mean, really, really bad. Colossally bad. And with inside 3 years, out of 7 million unemployed, he got 5.5 million back to work. And he did it without borrowing any of their money. This drove them mad. Because if you've got people from around the world going to Germany and saying, hey, this is fantastic what you've done. How did you do that? And they start to find out how they did it, then the central banking scam's finished. How are you going to interest people in your stuff? This is why they have to control the entire globe. Because it only takes one person to illustrate the corrupt nature of the entire system to throw it into jeopardy. And that's why Germany, I suspect, certainly one of the key reasons, was earmarked for obliteration. There was a war of genocide, but it wasn't against the Jews. It was against the Germans. And it was perpetrated and organized by leading Jewish figures who used their influence within Britain, particularly courtesy of that retard Churchill and your retard Roosevelt at the time, these highly skilled, intelligent, but easily manipulated fools, to wage war on the Germans and destroy very much the people that we, our nation, should have been stood with. And we've now got the world, you know, we've reaped what we've sown. And yet, had you and I been alive back in those days, we wouldn't have known any better. Because as Dave was saying earlier, the media is the key. If we cannot gain access to the truthful information to measure it, we're lost. And we have been lost for a long time, but far, far less lost, I would suggest, over the last 20, 25 years, courtesy of the internet, which, of course, is derided as a place for conspiracy theorists and all this kind of other stuff, but is, in fact, a goldmine for people like us, and we're growing in number. So, you know, we are fighting a rearguard action. It would be nice not to, wouldn't it, and to turn that round a bit, but we're not there yet.
Scorpio, would you like to pick up on Paul's observations?
Yes, Paul, those are excellent observations. I totally agree. And, yeah, you know, what we're told is capitalism really is just an illusion. I totally agree with that. And your explanation of how this works is just spot on. I can't find a fault in anything you're saying. And I just find it interesting that, you know, we're supposed to believe that, you know, that it's an open system and, you know, anybody can make it. And really, they're in the process of cleaning all the little loose ends up right now. And as it's been called, the purification of the oligarchy is what's going on right now. And I think that's an apt description.
Yeah.
Dave Gaharie, please, your thoughts.
Yes, you know, it really is always a pleasure hearing Paul elucidate on these points. And I can't, of course, disagree with anything he said. That is the problem when they saw that Germany rebuilt without their help of this poison central bank infrastructure. They had to be destroyed. They had no choice. So people scratching their heads and going, geez, why did the United States and England side with the Soviet Union against Germany? Well, it always goes back to the money. So, yes. Very well said, as usual, Paul.
Well, and I just add one quick thing. You know, one of the true acts of genius that they did under Hitler was tying the Deutschmark to the value of labor. That was absolute genius, and I don't think anyone else has done that in modern history.
No, I mean, I think it's because, you know, under, I've forgotten all their names now, but I've got all their books. You know, there are many ambivalent figures in the German background with regards to economics, and you'll get good and bad reports, even against many of the things I've said today as well. And they have to be viewed, you know, because there are contrary and opposing views. And many of them have got merit in all sorts of ways. I mean, people will say, no, Hitler was able to rearm because they gave him loads of money, to which my response would be, so what? I'd take it too. And what's your point? You see, that they were absolutely stuffed. And there's another element, which I think is now we're seeing much more to the fore, which is why this period of history and why Hellstorm is so important, I would suggest, for white people to become familiar with, because it is like the pits of human behavior. It's just astonishingly foul. But it's that if the things run counter, their entire scam, which they've been running for thousands of years, this goes all the way back to Babylonian banking, would be up. Now, it was easy to suppress knowledge in the past because, you know, freedom of the press was restricted to those that had one. And I didn't have one, and neither did any of us here or our forefathers. We didn't own printing presses. They were very expensive things. And of course, when there's a lot of expense involved, whose help do you need? The bank. And that's how it's always been controlled, through loans and banking and everything like that. But what Germany did, I mean, to get those men back to work is an astonishing feat. I mean, you've got this example in England. The British wouldn't allow German liners, these big cruise ships like the Gustav and these others, to dock in England and let the German tourists off. Why? Because the British thought they'd won World War One, and they were still going down to the toilet at the end of the garden, right? And these Germans were going to turn up in fine clothes on world cruises organized by the government to give them a break, right? This wasn't going to go down very well. So there's this phrase, isn't there? Before a country can go to war against another country, it first must, and always does, go to war against its own people. And that's what had happened in this country. I mean, World War One is, as far as we're aware, the first full use of psychological warfare being waged on the population courtesy of the atrocity stories in the newspapers. This is what they did to soften people up. We have a situation then with World War II where it was different, because most of the letters in the quality newspapers in England in the mid to late 30s, the vast majority of people in England didn't want war with Germany at all. This had to be organized. And the only way it could be organized was for Churchill to be placed in there, because the British didn't want it. Rightfully so. We don't want COVID. We don't want vaccines. We don't want anything. But yet again, what we want is not important. Not now. Not now that they've got what they want in sight, and that we must obey their every whim. So it's this psychopathic trait that exists there. And of course, it's not purely just Jews. I mean, I would suggest, in fact, that the people from our own group who go along with this are actually worse. They're worse. The Tony Blairs of this world, I speak over here. These people are vermin of the lowest caste, really. And without them, without that sort of leverage, the nations couldn't be subdued. So it's a big, big issue, because Germany also, to me, this is just me personally, when you see those posters of those happy families in Germany, you know, that came around under the Hitler thing, when you see those happy faces at the rallies, of course, they're to be demonized over here. They always put some tagline on to undermine it. But when you look at it and see it for what it is, it's amazing. I want a part of that.
Well, we seem to have lost you again. Tom, would you like to pick up?
Well, I'd just like to throw in an anecdote. Paul and I have talked about this. Dave and Paul have talked about this. the use of words right now, it just stuns us. Paul hit upon this. For instance, anything bad now in the world is either Nazi or Third Reich or Hitlerian or Gestapo, for God's sakes. Gestapo. Well, you know, the Gestapo, I certainly wouldn't have probably wanted to be arrested by the Gestapo, for sure. But let's not forget one central fact. Germany was at war for its very life, its very existence. And you had to shore up things inwardly so that they don't let that outwardly come in quicker, if you know what I'm saying. Gestapo, yes, they better be damn good at what they're doing, and they probably ought to be very ruthless. To use Gestapo today like it's a pejorative, of course. They use the Gestapo. Any cop is a Gestapo if he does his job. Well, back then, Germany was in a war to the death. In other words, nations of the world, the Allied nations of the world, were trying to destroy it utterly. And they pretty much figured that out with the firebombings. And for today, people to talk about the Third Reich and bring up things like that in the pejorative, especially Gestapo. I see that so much now and how wrong that it is. Well, they could have said Stasi. That would have meant a lot more to me because that was communist. And they weren't at war with for their very existence. Germany was. Let's put it this way. Any nation that's fighting for its very existence will have situations similar to the Gestapo and problems. Yes, I don't know every law that was passed during World War II, but I'm sure all of it was designed to strengthen the inward parts of Germany, and the Gestapo was one of them. You know, and that's something else I want to hit upon. It's a little thought that just keeps going through my mind, and we've talked a lot about this, but every time I see somebody in a mask, I feel like I'm looking at one of my enemies. No, not enemy in the real sense, but someone doing the enemy's bidding. In other words, when they passed this phony COVID nonsense throughout the world, and especially in the white worlds, and they passed the law, the mandate of wearing masks and distancing, and now it's all about the vax and things like that. People who just jump in line to get into the vax, and those who wear their masks when they're going shopping, I cannot shake this feeling that these are my enemies. These are the, yes, let's put it this way. They're stupid people. They're dumb people. They're people who believe, who watch their TV and believe what the TV tells them. They're not, they simply refuse to one finger tap on the mouse and go and find all the possible information they possibly could on COVID right now. Well, they're either not doing that or they've done it and they ignore it. So that's one of my big problems. Again, like I'm saying, pejorative of Gestapo. Next time you hear that word Gestapo used, just think about Germany in the midst of this terrible war to the death. And they've got to have police and they're looking for the bad people who might screw with it, like the White Rose organization, the other anti-German groups working within Germany during the war. And yes, you better have some people like the Gestapo who are ruthless. And so when they use that term over here in America, the Gestapo does this, the Gestapo does that, it's just carrying on the pattern that was the post-war pattern. In other words, everything in Germany was bad at the time. The Third Reich, everything was bad. Everything was bad.
Tom, I think you're making a lot of excellent points. I want to invite Scorpio to comment on your extension to the COVID pandemic, the fake pandemic, the mask wearing and all that as a form of subjugating the population, where the vaccines seem to be a faster way to kill us over the masks, which are a slower way, and where it looks as though they may manipulate the food supply to bring about starvation to fulfill the Deagle.com projection that by 2025, the population of America, which last year was 330 million, will be reduced to 67 million in less than 5 years by 2025. Before I turn to Scorpio, however, let me announce we're going to take callers after the break. The number 540-352-4452. Again, Mitchell will handle your call. 540-352-4452. For Tom, for Paul, for Dave, for Scorpio, for me, we're all here, eager to hear from you. Meanwhile, Scorpio, take the last few minutes, and I'll pick up with you after the break about how what's going on here in the United States looks like it's promoting something very akin to a communist agenda.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I agree with what Michael was saying. You know, people that are wearing the mask really kind of are the enemy because they're embracing the new.
Scorpio, did we lose you? What Tom was saying, that people who are wearing the mask are the enemy because they're embracing. Yeah, just Scorpio. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I said since the beginning that masking is essentially, you know, a movie prop for everyone to see, because that way you see all these people wearing a mask and your mind says to you, oh, wow, this is real. Look at all the people wearing masks. Incredible. This is terrible. And that's the whole point of the mask, that and subjugation. So people that wear the mask are participating in the creation of this new system, whether they know it or not. So unfortunately, they are the enemy, and they're going to use this psychological warfare that Michael was talking about, too, against anyone who will not take the shot or wear a mask. You are the enemy. I actually had a guy tell me I was killing people because I wasn't wearing a mask, and the guy was completely serious. So, you know, that kind of behavior is going to be amped up through the media and through this sort of mind control that was being referred to earlier. Absolutely.
Well, let everyone out there remember now, after the break, we're going to take your calls. We have Tom and Paul and Dave and Scorpio and me standing by. We'll be glad to field any questions you may have. The number again, 540-352-4452. Mitchell's here to handle your call, 540-352-4452.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we have a couple of callers standing by. We'll begin with Bruce from Texas. Bruce, join the conversation.
Yes, thank you, Jim. And I'd like to say hello to all these esteemed, knowledgeable people. I'm humbled and also pleased to have your information here on this network. I have a comment here about the black propaganda of World War One. I believe that was actually worked upon, or actually the foundation was made in the late 1800s. Adolf Ochs had bought the New York Times. Before that, he owned, at the age of 19, he took ownership of the Chattanooga Times. And at that time, the U.S. Army was warring with Indians who were on property, on land that was given to them through treaties that it was discovered later to have high commercial value with precious metals and timber and what have you. So that's where the black propaganda started. They would blow up or invent tax on settlers and rally the people to go to war and create the justification for war. And of course, Edward Bernays, he also pitched in, and we're still in that same trap of lies. And I don't know how we're going to get out of it, but here we are, you know. But an epiphany I've had from the conversation thus far is that the war on Germany in 1939 to 45, we're, like you say, they're still fighting the war now, and now the war's come home to us. And maybe more people take them up.
Let me invite Dave Gaharry to respond initially, then Scorpio. Go ahead, Dave, your thoughts.
Yes, that's right. It's a very excellent way of looking at it. That's right. And we have been fooled all this time, but it's so hard for most people to admit it, that, you know, the fooling has been done all of their lives, and it's hard for them to, you know, put the car in reverse and get out and do something about it, just like it is for a lot of people who buy a whole life insurance policy and they've paid into it for so many years, and you know, they can't cancel it because, well, they'll lose all that money. And, you know, I can't admit that I've been wrong, because then I'll look like an idiot, which of course we all have been until we wake up. And yes, a great comment. Thank you, caller.
Scorpio, yeah, would you like to pick up on it? Then I'll, yeah, Bruce, go ahead, Bruce. Then I'll go to Scorpio. Go ahead.
Sure, I just say Mark Twain. Didn't he quote, or didn't he make a quote? It's easier to fool the people than convince the people they've been fooled.
Yeah, it's easier to fool a man than to convince him he's been fooled. Scorpio, your thoughts. Scorpio.
Yes, well, that was a good call, absolutely. And, you know, Eddie Bernays really proved that you could enact mass mind control by marketing products to people. And what they've done is they've expanded that to every aspect of people's lives using the Bernaysian techniques developed in the 1920s, essentially. And they're being used now with this vaccine. It's safe and effective, and experts agree. Get it now before it's too late. And we're seeing all of this come to fruition on a mass scale. And it is going to be difficult to get out of, because so many people really believe the lies they're fed by the mainstream media and the government. And until people lose faith in those institutions, we're going to be in quite a conundrum.
We have a second caller, Paul from California. Paul, join the conversation.
Yeah, great show. One of the reasons that I occasionally tune in to Revolution Radio to hear shows like this, and I wanted to thank everybody that's assembled. Paul English, you made a fantastic observation, I think, about the fact that the English people didn't want a war with Germany. And, of course, it's worth noting that the opposite is also true. And Hitler and the National Socialists were on record as wanting to avoid any conflict because they viewed the English people as essentially extended family. You know, there's really no difference between the Aryans of England and Ireland and the Aryans of Germany. And that why do these things keep happening? It's exactly the sort of thing that has been talked about to Jim's credit on this show, is the domination and control of a very malevolent force that we can all see is arrayed against us. And I think it's important to draw the distinction between capitalism versus free enterprise. And what the Germans and the National Socialists, of course, were opposed to, and what any thinking human being should be opposed to, is the predominance of capital as opposed to the social interests of the people. And the fact of the matter is this has been, put down in words by so many different people, but I highly recommend a book called Money Manipulation and Social Order by Dennis Fahey. He was an Irish Catholic priest in 1943, and he spelled it out quite simply that money should be the servant of mankind and not the master. But of course, we do have a master, and it is both money and Jewish power. And also, just real quickly, too, something that I think Paul English mentioned earlier about this a book or booklet that he thought would perhaps name Red Terror. It's actually Red Symphony. And I bumped into this probably in the late 80s or early 90s. It was a similar time I was becoming awake. For example, I became aware of Other Losses, a book by a guy by the name of Bakke, I believe. And when I discovered this, it really just set me back and blew my world apart. The fact that it covered the fact that the Allies deliberately starved to death German POWs in outdoor pens, essentially, like farm animals. And I could never view my own country the same after that. So, thanks for the excellent show and for my opportunity to call.
Excellent, excellent call, Paul. Tom, and Paul, Tom, first, would you like to respond to Paul's call?
No, Paul, thank you so much. I enjoyed everything you said, and I couldn't disagree with anything about it. But yes, the outdoor pens, as you described them so accurately, just allowing them to starve to death or die of dehydration, even though the Rhine River often flowed right beyond the barbed wire out there, they would still machine gun anybody who broke through that wire and tried to get a drink of water. This stuff, it took rather, I think, 60-some years for that to become known, even though tens of thousands of people are involved in this. The wonderful Canadian James Bach actually wrote a book on Eisenhower's murder of upwards of 1.5 million helpless, disarmed German POWs. And propaganda. We have no real penalties for propaganda. I think it should be a war crime just like any other crime. It's a crime that lives on even after the bullets stop being fired. Propaganda continues. In fact, propaganda is still all around us, as you mentioned, about the COVID nonsense like that. Yes, propaganda, the Assad, President Assad of Syria, gassing his own people. That's still alive and well. You know, some people still believe that. So we're still living in an age of propaganda. There should be some terribly severe penalties for people who knowingly, willingly spread such nonsense.
Very good. Very good. Paul, your thoughts about Paul's call?
Yeah, no, Paul, thank you for from one Paul to another Paul. It's appalling, isn't it, really? But I think No, I'm glad you corrected it. It is Red Symphony, of course. After I'd said it, I went, oh, drat, no. But I'm glad you called in and corrected that. But it's Red Symphony, and it's actually quite heavy going as a document. The one you mentioned about James Beck and that Tom was just commenting on, I think he left us only recently. He shuffled off this mortal coil just a few years ago, I think, wasn't it? Yep. So not too far back. And that's another book that is astonishingly arresting because it suddenly, you know, displays for you all what the real intent was, the complete opposite of what we've been taught, the complete opposite, you know. And you were mentioning about the English people not wanting war with Germany. One of the things that is known, quite well known, David Irvin talks about this a lot, is the peace offerings that Germany made to Britain. Unfortunately, yeah. He wasn't making them to the British people because our people couldn't hear them because Churchill and his agents intercepted all 39 letters, I think there were, of peace offerings, and made sure that they never got to the attention of the public. A Chamberlain over here is painted as an absolute weed, but it wasn't. He came from a fine, long-standing family of people that served this country well, and he did his damnedest to make it out. But I think he said, speaking to Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, that there was nothing he could do. He'd been trapped and manipulated into this war by the Jews of the banking type. Something along those lines, when they were playing golf somewhere in the home counties, because Kennedy was the U.S. ambassador to Britain at the time. He found out a lot of stuff, and that's what had happened. So, you know, yet again, we weren't given a say in these things. And I used to have a colleague in Germany who unfortunately has received, I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning, received the full onslaught of German educational brainwashing. He was born about 48, so just after the war. And anybody who would be aware, the Germans are supposed to feel eternally ashamed for what supposedly they did, because what they've been told they did is not what they actually did. So they've got the wrong idea about themselves. And unfortunately for this chap, that's the way he is. And I used to explain it to him as follows. I said, look, it's very easy to work out World War II. Here's how it goes. Germany begins with the letter G, and so does the word good. And Britain begins with the letter B, and so does the word bad. Right? You've got it the wrong way round. I said, it's not the actual people on the ground that wanted any war. I said, but my country has been under the control of an alien force for hundreds of years, ever since the advent of the Bank of England in 1694. I said, and it's got worse and worse, and they've crept through the aristocracy. And this is why Englishmen look at their leadership and go, who the hell are these people? And I've done it. That's what I've heard my entire life. Right now, of course, with the COVID crap, none of us have got a voice. That's the first thing. We haven't got one. And they want you to pretend and join in that we have, you know, that democracy works. So thanks for your call, Paul. Yeah, really good point. And good excellent, to bring up James excellent. Back as well.
Excellent response. We've got another caller from Colorado, the 720 area code. Caller, please give us your first name. We know your state.
Hey, it's Sal. I'm calling you on the burn number. And I'm going to ask one question and then get out of here and let you guys have at it. Hey, Dave Gahari, how you doing? And thank you, Paul Lingish, for being here. I didn't know who you were before this point. My question is will they demonize the Nazis and everything? Or when are we going to start demonizing Prescott Bush? That's my question.
Well, Dave Gahari, Sal mentioned you. Let me start with you, Dave. Your thoughts.
Hey, Sal. Thank you. Well, I think it's easy, as I said, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but unless and until we get our own media, they're never going to demonize Prescott Bush, period. And that's my final answer.
All right. Scorpio, your thoughts about Prescott Bush?
Well, it's certainly true. That about sums it up. And look at how George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, especially now, is being treated like a wonderful president. No mention of his war crimes or, you know, slaughtering like 20 million people needlessly as the result of the disingenuous attacks that supposedly happened during 9/11. It's just amazing how they can make anyone into a hero or anyone into a demon. They have the power to do that as long as the masses keep believing in the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media.
We have another caller from the 360 area code, which I'm given to believe is the Cayman Islands. A caller from 360, join us. Give us your first name and your location.
Brian from Washington State.
Perfect. Brian, go for it.
So I'm going to read something May 11th from a gentleman named Cohen Jacobs. He's an expat from Belgium living in the Philippines. He's been making some serious headway, and he's talking about the subject you are discussing, and we could open it up for comments from your guests. So today, corporate environmentalists such as Al Gore and Klaus Schwab have no interest in getting rid of capitalism because without money and assets, they have no leverage. The same is true for communists such as the Chinese government and the Biden administration in the U.S. They, too, need capitalism to have a chance to at staying in power. No money, no power. And that's exactly what the communitarian doctrine is all about. It's what's at the heart of the confusion warfare in World War III.
So well, let me begin with Paul. Yeah, go ahead. Finish your question or thought.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Yeah, Paul, go ahead, Paul, and then we'll take Scorpio. Paul.
Oh, yeah, well, wonderful for you to bring Klaus Schwab into the conversation. Ugh, you know, but you're absolutely right. The control of the money has been the primary lever of control over all other things. Dave's talking about getting the media to combat these things. That requires working in the structure of finance capitalism to do it, to buy equipment, to do things. And it is possible for groups like this, as is obviously self-evident, to muster these rearguard actions, and they must be mustered and must continue and will do. But to turn the tables on it, we have to get on top of these things. And you're absolutely right about, Schwab is a moron. None of them have got ideas worth a tinker's cuss. But the problem we have is that we can't get hold of them in a public debate and literally make mincemeat of them. They won't ever turn up. They won't ever turn up into a bar for a discussion about it where their ideas would be shredded because they're bilge. And they're all based, they're bringing the environmental movement into this stuff now. All this thing about carbon. Oh, you've got to reduce your carbon footprint. Why? Sorry, I'm afraid I don't really go along with that at all. So they have the high ground with communication. And the problem with it is that it's like World War I. It's whoever's got the most guns, and they've got nearly all of them. Right. Now, we've managed to acquire a few recently, and they don't like this at all. I mean, their reaction to it is excessive, huge, immense, and silly. And all of these control systems with the whole thing about the COVID thing is to issue in the technocratic control grid. It's got nothing to do with it's just the flu, you know. And you can't trust any of the stats, so I don't bother reading them anymore. They're a waste of time as far as I'm concerned. Masks don't work. They're utterly useless, etc. Social distancing doesn't work because it's an aerosol. It travels 30 meters. People don't even wear their masks properly. And yet, look at them. They're obeying the mantra that comes down through the media. And I don't know whether we can save those people, because I actually think, you know, everybody on this show, and you, caller, and others that have called in, you could say that one thing that we have in common is an attitude. I think this is true. We might not all agree on everything that we're talking about, but the attitude is, you better prove this to me. I don't trust you. You're in authority. That doesn't mean to say you know what's going on. We're basically the troublemakers at the back of the classroom that are going, I don't think so. And they don't like us. They never liked us because they want to spell, you know, and project their lies rapidly. And so what they're doing is, under the current circumstances, they're yet again dividing to conquer. I think...
Hey, Jim?
Yeah, go ahead. Let me get Scorpio in here.
I'm sorry, I got one question before we go, so I'll just hold on. Just give me a chance
This is Saul? Yeah. What is your question, Saul? Bruce. Oh, Bruce, go ahead. Yeah. Yes, what's your question, Bruce?
Yes. Yeah, because I have to go. It's for Dave. And,
go ahead.
I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to cause trouble with you, but I had this big question. I heard you, I know you published on the USS Liberty, Erasing the Liberty. I commend you for that. I haven't read it yet. I read Bruce, Assault on the Liberty, though.
Bruce, that's too far afield. We'll come back to the Liberty. Meanwhile, we have another caller standing by, Scaredy Cat. Scaredy, join the conversation.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. So, Dolphin Day, Scorpio, I'm glad you leaped out of the blue ocean and woofed into this mic. And I'll just run up a tree and hide and do tiny little things, trying not to be seen by the bad guys. And as far as the money tied to labor, there is Steve Grumbine actually has this exact same idea. It's called modern monetary theory, but the unfortunate side is they are total loony leftists, and they are frantically pushing the climate eclipse or extinction, world extinction in 11 years. I think this year's down to 10 years. However, they have this idea called BFG, I remember it by, federally funded jobs, something like that. That is, when the budget is made, money should be available for any person to work to earn a good income. So that is your idea. I think Dave Scorpio, Dolphin Dave, talked about money being tied to labor, which is what Hitler did. And maybe we could have Steve Grumbine on. And just to Paul English, your English, my cousin, I was very surprised when I was a teenager to hear my cousins, my elder cousins by a decade, talking about Hitler. And it turned out to be one of their friends was named Hitler. And I was surprised because there's this overall, you know, general atmosphere that Hitler is a bad guy. And I was puzzled as why should one of their good friends whom they loved best should be called Hitler. So it turned out it was his real nickname, just like Jim is the nickname for James. And I asked my mom, like, why did they do that? Wouldn't that be insulting him? Then my mom's answer was a short, just they did it to respect him, for honor, to honor Adolf Hitler. And so my view, I think, and in Asia, my family being from Bangladesh, the view is that English and German are brothers, and they are all European brothers. And we don't, and also Churchill was not liked because of, how he was occupying and owning and stealing from countries in Asia because of the British Raj, the empire upon whom the sun never sets. So it's just brothers, English and bravery of the English, of course there is, and bravery of the German. And let the bravery stand of the ordinary people. And those leaders are just, there was a war, so one was against the other. So what? And so if somebody puts a gun to me and says I have to wear what I call the yarmulke with ear loops upon my nose and mouth, I usually have a pen and a paper notebook because I'm going old school, so that they cannot electronically erase anything from my life or try. And I'm just going to draw a swastika on it. The swastika would be the Sanskrit pronunciation. Swastika in Bangladesh is a symbol of goodness, ideal hopes, a purity from corruption. And also I'm going to go out, I think, and find a rebel Confederate handkerchief. If not, I'm going to start drawing one. Okay.
Scaredy, thanks. Thank you so much for that call. I can't thank enough our guests today, Paul English, Tom Goodrich, Dave Gaharry, Scorpio.
Can I just interject here? Because I know we have a few minutes left.
Absolutely. Yes, Dave.
And somebody asked me, and I always, get angry when this isn't discussed, but folks want to know where they could pick up Tom's book and Paul's audiobook and
excellent
Kyle's documentary. Yes. So it's very easy. It's moneytreepublishing.com. And by the way, thanks, Scaredy Cat, for your call. Always great to hear you.
moneytreepublishing.com and just click on the shop tab. And also, there's a new website up that has all of Tom's books autographed. And it's easy. It's thomasgoodrich.com. So thomasgoodrich.com, Tom will autograph any of his books that are up there on the website. He's really a prolific guy like you, Jim. And moneytreepublishing.com, where you get Tom's book autographed, inscribed, just like on Moonrock Books, Jim. And Paul's audiobook, which is 14 hours long, or Kyle's documentary of Hellstorm. Thank you.
Sensational, David. Thank you so much for that addendum, which was very appropriate. Once again, I express special appreciation to Tom Goodrich, Paul English, Dave Gaharry, Scorpio. We missed Giuseppe today. We thank Chris for being part of it for a while, and all the callers. Thank you all for listening. See you Friday.
Hey, Jim, you there? We have about 30 seconds.
Oh, well, Mitchell, yes. I was just delighted with it. Scorpio, would you like to add a final thought here?
Oh, absolutely.
Listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.